I was tempted when I heard the Bible study leader say every prayer he's done in the morning is give us the ears to hear and the eyes to see. And I thought, aha, that is important. And I know what he's referring to in observing things, but we do need eyes to see. It was a gift given to us through creation, and we do learn visually, and I believe the word is not just words. That word comes through our visual experiences. And we have artists who have a language of their own to appeal to that vision that we have. And we know that the Bible and words are is rather simplistic and isn't full of a lot of description. So it's our dramatists and our poets and our writers and visually our artists that help us stretch what we know and help us fill in what we seem to need. We seem to need to see something visually. And the artists have fulfilled that function and have fulfilled a function of education, of glorifying, of helping see out a theology ever since the beginning of the first story or the start of Christianity. And it's been a favorite topic for many artists, particularly the Middle Ages and up through the Renaissance, and a little less so today, but still a lot going on today. The Byzantine Church, well, if we start with the catacombs, there was a lot of artwork in the catacombs, but a lot of it came from the influence of the Romans. The image of Christ as a shepherd with the sheep around his shoulders is from a Roman statue that was really from a past image. So many images were recalled from other eras and brought into the Christian era. The Byzantine Church had a liturgical art with a lot of rules and regulations. Christ had to be portrayed a certain way. Certain colors were used, a lot of gold leaf, a lot of mysteries came into those formations. And a lot of reasons for the way the artwork turned out. As many of the early churches, the only form of art was mosaics, which is hunks of stone, and that doesn't give you a lot of detail. Or later on, it was painted on walls, which we call fresco, which is plaster, where you mix just enough plaster that you think you'll get done for that day, and you mix in your colors and it dries on the wall. There's no changing. And that gets painted, that's the end of that section for the day. But fresco gave them a little more liberty in how they painted. And then back to the Byzantine Church, I was going to say, these rules and regulations were what became icons. All their artwork were icons, which were supposed to really be blessed and have a religious feeling and really contained a mystery in them. They were often accused of being worshipped as an image. And that's the other point I want to refer to is, of course, we inherited from the people before Christ and Jewish people this whole concept of no graven images, and they were not allowed to portray God. And there's really very little artwork that portrays God. And a lot of this carried over, I think, into Christianity of not portraying God, and is still part of today. I think the Puritans and the Calvinists picked up a lot of this graven image idea when they viewed artwork or viewed any representations of the Christian message. The other part of it is, what did Christ look like? There's very little in the Bible about what he should look like. Well, we knew he was Jewish, so he must have looked Jewish. He must have had features like his own genetic background. But what did he look like, and what does the Bible tell us? And it isn't even worth looking anything up in the Bible. Can you think of a few things that he was, that referred to his personality, which might give you an image of what he looked like?
Well, I sure can, because anything I might say is going to be influenced 100% by Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, we can say, we have a blue-eyed Christ, and we have this very popular one with Sunday school. It's a very weak type of Christ. But I was going to say, emotionally or in feelings, what are we told about Christ? We knew he... Can you think of some stories or something you can quote from the Bible?
Well,
he went, aren't
he? He loved children.
Yeah. Well, did he smile?
He must have smiled.
Yeah, he loved, anyway. Well, we know that Jesus wept. He wept when Lazarus died. And he was very compassionate. He had wept.
Penny, let's use that black pen there.
All right.
I can't see it.
And we know that, what other emotion did he show in the temple?
Anger.
Yeah, we know that he got angry. So if you were an artist showing some scene or showing Christ, you'd have this to go by. Can you think of any others? Well, think of words we use in hymns, maybe.
Well, that's where we get influenced by something that isn't necessarily the truth at all.
Yeah.
I think.
But what do we sing about? Jesus meek and mild. I don't know what the hymn is, but there is one that says that.
You're right. That's the same as the hymn writer.
Yeah, that is right.
So they're the hymn writers. We follow them, but somebody has this impression. We have the suffering. So you could... I've got these in different tenses, but anyway. We know that Jesus suffered on the cross. He suffered when he was beaten. He suffered with the crown of thorns. But we know he was kind. Sometimes he was, can you think of any more words?
He must have been thoughtful because he knew so many.
Well, I'm trying to think of things you could picture.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you, well, maybe you could picture
he was
a woman.
Vincent?
Pardon me?
He was firm with people.
Firm. Say, right. You had that written down. Then we can go back to what does some of the church, what were they, is he authoritarian? Was he... Some people thought him as a king. Some people thought him as the authority figure. So you run into a lot of these, firm would run into that authority.
Well, he fasted an awful lot of times, so he must have been very thin.
He could have been, yeah, okay.
That's by deduction.
He's a carpenter,
yeah, he should have. Strong hands, strong body.
38.
And it goes back to the whole idea throughout the whole centuries of visualizing Christ and also interpreting him some way is it was God made human. But divine. And I think we still struggle with that today in everything, in any kind of film version, any kind of dramatic story. How human, how divine. And I think every age has struggled with this. And how do they depict it? In the very early Byzantine, the way to make him divine was to not be human. Stiff, stern, look straight out. What they often called a heavenly gaze. And Mary was given that too. And slowly, as we went through the Renaissance and approached the Reformation, we get them more and more human-like, and Christ becomes more human. And they often say most movies about Christ and the miracles never come off very well. They're either too sweet and saccharine, because how do you visualize that? How do you really show an ecstatic moment, a miracle moment? It's very hard to picture. It's very hard to visualize. And when we do it, it becomes too human and we kind of lose it. So now I do have some examples of images that have been done throughout the ages. And of course, I've only had to pick and select. So there are many more images to show you. So the first one I show you is from the Middle Ages. And as I said, in the Middle Ages, the artwork was anonymous. We never know who really did it. They were often done on ceilings and walls of huge Romanesque buildings, and they were often mosaics. This one is a mosaic, and it comes with the name of the Pantocrator. Does anyone know what that really means? I'm not too sure either. But Christ is a very authoritarian figure. He is stern, he's looking up, and of course this image was probably high up in a ceiling wall and done with mosaic, so you can see it had to be very strong features. But we do have the beard. I always get a kick out of it, and you'll see several now where these little wisps of hair coming down through his part. I don't know what that's all about, but maybe that makes him more human. But now the halo doesn't quite show in this picture. And these were probably colored stones. I mean, this was a bright, colorful thing. And these images had to be large to be seen, and they were teaching the people who were not literate and who all their visions or teaching was going to come from this visual world. And here's this starry eye. I think if you met someone look like that, you'd be... And a piercing eye that could look right through you. Well, that was from the 12th century, or the 10th century, the 1000s. And it was a mosaic from San Sofia Church, which is in Constantinople. Now this is another one, and it was Russian, coming out of the Russian Orthodox Church. And these become part of the liturgical art rules and regulations they had there. This particular one, though, is cloisonné on gold. And cloisonné, you know, is where they put the enamel work between the little wires, and it is baked, and it is on a piece of metal, so it's a different type of artwork. So again, you're restricted to the lines, but oh, look at the wonderful, the other side of this artwork is what fun they had with the folds and the fabric and with the lines and the halo, and really played upon it and glorified it. But here's the pose you'll see in all the first of them. This is the Pantocrator, and this is the Christ giving the blessing, the papal the blessing, and he's always heard holding a book. And you'll see this come through the centuries as a symbol. How do you identify this man? We know it's Christ because of the halo, because of the blessing, or we call it the blessing, and the book. So this also is Russian, comes out of the 12th century. This, I'm sorry, comes out of one of the manuscript books. Again, look at the size of that hand giving the blessing. It's huge, but it's graceful. And all the wonderful folds and the fabric. And his feet are on a little stool, but he's not really standing. He's sort of standing on his toes. So you get this floating idea. Christ is divine, so you float. You don't have to walk. But he still was giving a little stool so he could sit on it. Four Gospels around the edge, the symbols of the Gospel. He's got the book, is in one hand, the blessing in the other. There's the Alpha and the Omega. They look like they're in a little wire.
Right down. He looks older than 33.
Yep. Well, again, maybe that's how old they look. But the eyes looking out and this wonderful halo. But he's in an almond shape. It's called the nimbus. And this becomes sort of a heavenly symbol also. And this is used in a lot of sculpture in front of cathedrals. It's used in many, many of the early depictions and many of the Byzantine ones. And it's the holy space for Christ. This is another one that comes out of the Byzantine church. And it's called Blessing, and also comes out of the Russian church. Because the Greek Orthodox Church is split into the Russian Orthodox, seemed to hold on to the artwork and did more of this icon. This is perhaps a cover of a book, and it looks like it was carved out in a piece of wood, but it's same gesture, blessing, same, the book is open now, held in one hand, and you have some detail in the fabric. You've got the big, nice, sort of blown up coffer. But he's also got the little piece of hair here, which I think is so funny. It's like somebody did it once, and everybody copied it. If it has any more meaning, I haven't found it out. But if anyone trips on that one, I'd like to hear more about it. And then many of the symbols are there, the dove and the flowers. And of course, these were eras when they had scriptoriums, and there were nuns and monks that's all they did all day long was copy scriptures, all these wonderful hand calligraphy scriptures, and do little manuscripts with paintings in them or book covers like this. And they were called the scriptoriums, and nuns were just as active in this activity as the monks and the men were. So it was a wonderful, rich heritage that preserved the art and also did a lot of this. Here's another one. There's been a little doubt whether this was Christ or it was St. Matthew, but I'm still using it. This one actually is from the 18th century, which shows how strong that icon and that stylized figure is. It's Christ. There's the blessing. There's the book. And crosses on, but he's more like a bishop. See, it's the 18th century now. We've already established the church. There's all this organization and the bishops and the priests. And his halo is simpler. And I think there's Mary on one side, and usually it's John on the other. Or it's some bishop or cardinal in the church. But the gold leaf is still there. And this is, it looks like it is Russian or something. Anybody identify that? I don't know. But these elaborate robes, and Christ becomes, of course, the head of your church. He's going to look like your bishop. Here's a sculpture, which is Giselbertus Autumn, Christ in Judgment. So some of these are blessings, shows as Christ, as some are the authoritarian figure. And this is supposed to be Christ in Judgment, but you've got the nimbus, the owl again, the feet down like he's floating. I mean, how can he stand up there? And you've got detail in the robes. It's interesting, though, to fit him into that space. He's almost got the figure the way it would look in the crucifixion. But they often say as people were crucified and the body became limp, the knees joints would go out. And he's almost in the shape of somebody crucified. But this is now a stone carving on a church, and there are the other figures around him. But now we're jumping to one of the first paintings, and this is Jatel, an Italian painter. And it's moved quite quickly from this stiff medieval icon, Byzantine art. And he's also the 12th century, but this is what's happening in Italy, where they were moving faster towards the Renaissance. This is the betrayal figure, but you've got Christ. He's very firm. He knows where he's going. It's a very serious moment. And Judas has just betrayed him. And this is a fresco, so that's why you see a lot of the paint chipping off there. But how quickly this has changed from this frontal view. See, those others, it was all frontal view. You never had a portrait or side view. You didn't have Christ pictured in an activity. What they were documenting was the birth of Christ, the authority of Christ, and the crucifixion early, just documenting the main events. But now we're getting into more of the stories, and we're getting into more of the human side of Christ, and what were some of the other parts of the story. This is one of the suffering of Christ, and it's Giovanni Caravaggio from France in the 15th century, and it's Christ in agony. In fact, you can see the blood. He's really sweating blood and tears here. And the angel is coming to offer him the cup in the Garden of Gethsemane, where there is one point where he is offered a cup and he's asked. He's actually given a chance to back out or stop, and he goes ahead because he's in such suffering. He's got kind of reddish hair, and there's several of my slides I didn't bring along that he has reddish hair, and I believe they've documented there is a Jewish tribe that did have red hair. So whether they are going into that background of Jesus or whether the artist just wanted to go into more reds, or whether brunette hair has more reds, but he's quite reddish here. Now here's some sculptures, and I'll go through a few of them. And they are mostly from the Middle Ages coming out there. And there are a lot of crucifixions, I could tell you. I love this one. This one's from the Baptism of Christ. And it's a polychrome. We don't realize that a lot of sculptures done in the early years were painted. The paint's chipped off, and we see them as pure wood or pure stone. But they were painted realistic colors, which is really hard to imagine. And this one's about the nearest to a smiling, real Jesus. He's even got teeth.
Yeah.
He's very human. And it's a full figure. This is just the head and this dark hair and an expression. And he's really got more feeling to him and more expression to him. But he's still coming out of sort of the Middle Ages, we're probably up to about the 14th century here. Here's another one of the suffering Christ, and it's probably crucifixion towards the end, but a very strong German wood carving with the hair. No, there's something around his head, doesn't look like the cross of thorns, but it, of course, hard to put a halo on wood sculpture. Here's Bellini, one of the famous Italian painters, who comes out, we're getting up to the 14, 1500s, and this is Christ blessing. And I like to me, he looks, this is Jesus meek and mild. It's also a suffering Christ because he is showing the stigmata. He's here, this is Christ appearing later, almost like when he appeared to Doubting Thomas, because they ripped away a little of his robe to be sure you saw the wounds in his chest, but you have the hands, the nail holes in the hands, and he's still got the cross of thrown around his head. But he's in it's interesting, instead of a simple hand-woven robe, which the soldiers divided later, this one has gold trim. There's always something on it that still brings Christ into the kingly association. Same expression as those very early ones, the blessing in the hands and holding the book. So it's really that same formula, only brought into a more realistic era where we're really making figures human-like. This is one from Leonardo da Vinci. And again, it's a Christ, eyes downcast, more meditative, more thoughtful, and certainly not the authoritarian, eyes piercing, and a more gentle Christ, thoughtful Christ, kind and thinking. Now this is Michelangelo's Christ from the Last Judgment. And I'm sorry I'm bringing my notes. I didn't bring Time magazine, and it could be about 10 years ago, had a wonderful article on who is the Christ, and it had all kinds of famous paintings from years back, and the article was more about which Christ appeals to certain people. And they said the Michelangelo Christ is an athletic, muscle man, well-developed, healthy, no amazing here. Would really appeal to the 20th century, or should, as far as a figure, because he embodies this healthy, robust man. And of course, Michelangelo, he lived to be 89. He lived in 1475 to 1564. This is his judgment wall in the Sistine Chapel, and Mary is next to him there. And there is the incision in his chest and the stigmata on his hands and his feet. So it's similar to the one before, only here he rises in judgment, but with these marks still on him from the crucifixion. You know, Michelangelo was very proud of being, he knew it himself, and he's gone down in history of being the most capable artist in drawing the human body. And it was at a time when they had just discovered a lot of Roman statuary that were of athletes in the human body. So he just loved doing the human body. And this Last Judgment is just full of bodies all over the place. The only thing he's liked to do new. And it took him 6 years to paint this. He was 60 years old when he started the Last Judgment on the wall. He was 66 when he ended. It was a long project, and he was what we call a senior citizen. And the Pope didn't like it, and there was kind of a puritanical group that was in at that time, or Pope. So he wanted him to go back and change the painting and put in the drapery to cover up places. Well, Michelangelo refused after 6 years, I think you feel. So they hired some other artists to go in and put in the changes. Sounds a little bit like today in some places. This is real clear, but this is that wall of the Last Judgment, and this is the figure. Mm-hmm. And somehow on this slide, it doesn't show quite so clear, but look at the figures in there. You know, it's the flood, and it's damnation, and it's figures. Once they're going through the flood and going through all different stories of creation and crucifixion and hell and damnation, it's just a very complex thing. Really, the best way to see it is get a book and look at the details. Now, this is Rembrandt's Jesus, and he certainly has the very compassionate, kind, gentle eyes, and looks like a very compassionate person, someone I think you'd feel identified with. And he's far from the authoritarian king type Christ. I always wondered why they didn't use this picture in Sunday school books more. It's a very famous painting. It's one of our...
It's really similar to the halo there at all.
There's no halo. I think as we came further along in the painting and after the Reformation, the halo became associated a lot with Catholicism or decorativeness. And if you're going to... They took Christ as he was, like on the road to Emmaus, and when he preached to the disciples, he was really the man, the human man. And so many painters did not use the halo. And if they did, and I know in other paintings of Christ, and this isn't the whole painting, Rembrandt's technique, you know, was using a lot of highlighting, and there'd be a glow of color, like his nativity, the glow of colors around the Christ child. So there might have been more of a glow of color around the head. It's interesting, they often say, you know, that we have lost a lot of our sensitivities and sensuousness, that people in the early eras, and you can take this for what you would, were more sensitive. See, they weren't often literate and hadn't focused on a lot of reading, and that they could sense a person that had spiritual qualities, and that the artist took this up then and made halos, that there would be an aura around them. And when you hear people talk about auras and that today, they often say we do have globes around us, if you want to go into that. So this is a 20th century artist, the Suffering Christ, Mestovic sculpture again. This is a 20th century beautiful, it is, you know, wood sculpture coming out of Africa. And of course we know that Africa is a very strong Christian nation, and a lot of their suffering and their Christianity is really giving us examples. They are, the way they are expressing their Christianity, of what they're going through, their suffering, and their emerging as a mature nation. This particular one, of course, is the Suffering Christ with the crown of thorns carved out in the head, and this beautiful dark wood, and the eyes, well, it's bearing suffering. It's not an agonized suffering, and I think it's a very powerful head, and we are getting a lot of artwork out of the African countries too that is very expressive. And now we're coming to this question again, I think I didn't bring out early enough on the others early, is that each one saw Christ in their own country and their own models. And if they were Italian, you got a more Italian-looking Christ. They were German, Christ looked a little more German. I have one I should have brought shown here. It's a Darlin, a painting from Sweden, and Christ, it's one of Christ coming into the, on a donkey in the parade, and he's got a Swedish frock coat on, he's got blonde long hair and blue eyes. Well, to them, Christ was Swedish, and they made him look just like it. So now we have these emerging new Christians around the world, and Christ to an African has to look like them and be black. And we need to see a broader view of Christ. This is another one called the Bufano Christ. This is an American one though, by an American artist, but I think very much influenced by the African Christ. And I would say very reminiscent of the early Christ, who aren't any nationality, aren't as much human looking as trying to make a stylized head with the stylized hair and all. And many of these are coming out of folk cultures, coming out of Native American or coming out of an Appalachia or a... This is an Eskimo whalebone carving of a Christ. And of course, I guess if you didn't know, you'd know it is more a general head. It is Eskimo, but it also is sort of every man, everybody. This is Roald, who's a French artist, and he used to work in stained glass windows. He was a stained glass window artist, and all his paintings have a sense of that depth of color in windows and the dividing up of the shapes. But he too, his Christ now is any nationality, any racial group, sort of a stylized Christ. And he has done a whole series that he called his Misery series that are all lithographs that were done in black and white. And here we have a Chinese Last Supper. And Christ is Chinese and everybody's seated at the table. And it's at the moment that Judas is told he will betray and does betray Christ. But here you have John leaning against Christ, and you know that's only in one gospel that it's mentioned that his favorite disciple leaned his head against him. And there's a whole history of artwork with John leaning on Christ. And if you look at the other gospels, it's not in there at all. So it shows their certain reading of the Bible that they picked up a closer view there. Here is Christ as Chinese. Go back to this one, it's kind of fun. Even the stools are the little red lacquered stools, and the chopsticks are on there, and the dishes are all, I mean, everything is in the culture. And this is a 20th century painting in your round window. Oh, did you see the halo on there? It's
oh, that big spot?
Well, the gold around his head. Yeah, and there are little lines, and it's more gold in the small one. Why? And the hands are delicate like those early paintings. But here, of course, he's not blessing. He's taking hold of the toast. So I think that we often used to look at these as kind of missionary paintings, you know, and isn't that nice? But now I think we view them more and more as Christ as a person that could take the form in any part of the world, in any racial group. These are some more of Roald's. Very strong. And I wanted to put this in, even though you don't see the face of Christ. This is one of Rembrandt's etchings. And they are so famous, of the crucifixion. And he did many, many, you know, a whole series of etchings. And all the details that are in it. And I think there is one book where he did 15 different editions of this one, where he kept changing it and changing it. But he kept a record of each change. So you get a very interesting process of how that changed around. So that's the slides that I brought for today, and I'd like to hear if you see then a change. How do you see the changes in trying to portray Christ? Have we lost some of the divine? Have we expressed the human? Which one relates to you? Or if you were able to tell an artist what you'd like, how would you like?
Look to me like they're all according to the culture that they're being painted in.
Yeah.
Instead of the change of Jesus' actual life being the change in the picture, it's the change in the part of the world they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. And that could say to us that the gospel reaches out through every age and fits every culture. And Christ does too. See, that would be one way, because what did Christ really look like? What did the historical Jesus look like? You know, Schweitzer wrote the whole book on the quest of the historical Jesus, trying to find out exactly. So do you have the historical, you have the story, and then you also have how it fits today. And I guess they are visually saying this is how we see today.
Well, it's understandable, but it's very interesting. That's wonderful.
But I think we'd be a little shocked if we had Christ coming down the street in a pair of blue jeans or a business suit, but that's really what they did. They put him in the clothes of the day, just like they did with Mary. But somehow we can't quite picture it that way or want to accept it that way. And yet some of us go back to these Renaissance renditions, to the medieval icons, and get our expression from that. And does it really fit your theology? And it can. But I think we need to look for new forms, and we need to search out artists that are doing Christ figures today, and there are still a lot of them. I didn't bring Dolly's figure of Christ. There's several that I'm missing. Van Gogh did some biblical stories and did a crucifix. Gauguin did.
Our interpretation of our religion and the Bible has changed vastly through the years, and the coldness or the brutality of the, say, Puritan interpretation, we can't respond to that because we're into a vision of a loving Christ. Like to me, that Rembrandt one was very moving.
Mm-hmm. It's got the loving.
The coldness or the remoteness of the icons.
Yeah.
But that's their religion, is remoteness from Christ. Ours is a reaching out in our interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Seeing the human side, you see the warmth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which one of those pictures is a picture of the most recent work?
Well, I guess bringing it up today, it was those last sculptures from Africa and the cultural ones, and Rowald. And then the next one would have been going back to Rembrandt, was 16th century, see, 1600s.
One is beautiful.
And I'm sorry I don't have a slide. Rich Cameron, that did the ceiling in the city center, did a wonderful laughing Christ. It's just wonderful. And there used to be cards in there. And I know he gave, or a Luther seminary has a great big painting of it. He's done several hours. And there are very few paintings of Christ laughing. And it's hard to paint someone laughing, number one. That's one thing. And the other thing is, we are so, we wanted to make Christ very divine and dignified, and we didn't want to break that dignity. And if you had something that looked too laughing, laughing was sort of everyday or clown, or we didn't want to ridicule. Imo Nolde, who does watercolors, also doesn't put many features in, but Christ is just kind of this blob of color and with the children around, and does more themes about the loving Christ. And I think very severe scenes or paintings on the crucifixion are almost too startling and too blunt to people today. A foundation has purchased a big, huge crucifix that's very harsh and startling and severe, and it's in the Harvard Library. I think no church would accept it. They said it'd be too hard. So is that also saying something about us today, that we can't take the visualization of a real harsh of this, or also that we want the loving and we want the that side of Jesus, or like talked about this morning, but we don't want the crucifixion, we don't want the suffering, we don't want to picture the suffering.
But life was a good deal harsher than in total, and their view of life was probably a lot less joyful.
Well, it could be, except we have the poor and we have people suffering today, and often we put them out of our sights. That too, it was cruel, but it's pretty, we've got a lot of cruelty today too in certain parts of the world, but they become isolated.
But in like the religious troubles in England in the 16th century, am I right? I don't know. But, you know, a good beheading and a good drawing and quartering was a show that you didn't want to miss.
Can you imagine?
Let's go and see it.
Gee. Maybe the TV broadcasts and news aren't all off today, that when they say we want to hear all that, that's right. Mm. many times, I think it's gotten better, but our Sunday school type of artwork and our church art was, has been all very placid and soft, and we don't want to offend anyone, or we don't want anything too strong. And I think much artwork has been, and much of the artwork that's being done is very strong. And we back off of it a little bit. And maybe we need stronger images. And why is it we don't often want them around us? Well, can you... Well, I'm just throwing them out as things to think about, and what images should most people... I've always had the debate too, you know, what is religious art? Is this Christian art and so on? And of course, if it has a Christian theme or story, that's easy to say. But how do you give something a spiritual look, or how do we, is it something we want around us? And there are many contemporary artists working today, many of them not with a face of Christ though, because they realize we don't know what he looked like. He was a living man. How do you give it a spiritual emphasis? So they work more on, I think the direction is more, how do you paint love? How do you paint spirituality? How do you transfer that, even in language, music? So I think we're moving into a different era of either showing Christ is Christ to every nation, every person, and you're getting all these other images, or we're also trying to express what are these other elements, how can you put them into visual terms. We seem to be able to put them into musical terms. Music seems more abstract. And maybe we're moving into an era of being able to put these into more terms and being able to have more artwork in the churches, and not to reach back in the past always, but to try to look more and more. We have a lot more forms coming out of like Africa, and I'm sorry, I didn't have anything from South America. A lot of images, and they will show Christ in a pair of jeans and a shirt, and looking just like they look, or like a peasant. And I think, so we need to look for new types of forms to express, and start watching artists and see if there's something coming out that you see, and give encouragement.